Welcome to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Driven to Business is a business forum program that focuses on success principles in business. And now, it's time for Driven to Business.
Good morning and welcome to this week's edition of Driven to Business. I'm your host, Eddie Mayfield, and we're glad you're here. We are streaming live on biz1190.com even as we speak, and today's program will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com, and there you will also find links to our guest. We have a great guest today. Sue Miley is the founder and a professional coach and the president of Crossroads Professional Coaching out of Baton Rouge, Louisiana. She also has a blog called Christian Business Crossroads. Sue, welcome to Driven to Business.
Thank you, Eddie. I'm glad to be here.
Sue, tell us, I should say in full disclosure here, I'm a regular reader of Sue's blogs, and I really like them and find them very handy. Sue, tell us why you started or how you started the Crossroads Professional Coaching Company.
Well, I had left the business world myself to go back to school and become a Christian counselor, a mental health counselor. But after spending 20 years in business, I felt that I could help business owners also to be able to grow their business. It's very stressful being an entrepreneur, and I felt there was a lot of synergies with my counseling education and experience to not only help them manage the stresses and the challenges of managing and running their own business, but also use my background in business to help them with real business issues and solutions and ways to grow their business from startup, you know, through different stages of the life of a business.
So if my wife were sitting here and she heard you say that you had been a mental health counselor before, she would be telling me that you were talking to the right person here. In terms of, because she thought I was crazy for some of the business adventures I've gotten involved in over time. You did have a very good career and a very successful career in business before you started your present line of work. You want to talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I started in more of the corporate world. I graduated in finance and went back and earned an MBA while I was working in marketing. And with one company, a regional, very successful regional coffee company, consumer packaged goods company, for 12 years, and held all different roles from marketing manager, financial analyst, CFO, controller, and then I ended the last 5 years there with starting up a coffee house division, kind of like a Starbucks type of a coffee house, for this regional company, and grew it from 2 stores to about 30 stores in a 4 to 5 year period of time.
That's something that's interesting. I was talking with someone the other day, and we were actually talking about marketing, and we were talking, and coffee came up because there was a time back when I was in my mid-30s, I suppose, when I've always been a bit of a coffeeholic and grew up drinking coffee, but none of my kids did. I mean, they did not drink coffee, and none of their friends drank coffee. And as I got older and older, none of them drank coffee. All of a sudden, somehow Starbucks shows up on the scene, and they, all of a sudden they're all drinking coffee. And it's kind of an amazing thing that happened, because I really think coffee was an art. Coffee drinking is a dying art, but it really began to kind of die out, but then it came back. Do you have any explanation for that other than the fact that Starbucks did a good marketing job?
Well, there's a couple of things. Actually, a lot of our research was how do we attract the younger population, because our demographic was aging out, and just the types of drinks that you can get at a coffee house with all the sweet drinks with syrups in them and the frozen drinks, and just the idea of hanging out at a local neighborhood coffee house, those all attract a younger demographic. The benefit is that when they start drinking the frozen drinks and the sweeter drinks, at some point those become pretty expensive.
Right.
So you'll see people starting to trade to the more just plain coffee type drinks to subsidize their budget because they're usually less expensive, And then that gets them hooked on the stronger coffee and the less dessert-type drink, which has them start drinking regular coffee at home and getting just plain coffee at the coffee house. So I think that Starbucks obviously did a lot of the work with the number of stores they opened in their marketing to introduce the younger generation to coffee. So I certainly think that they had a huge impact on it. But I think it's the products as much as anything that attracted the younger population.
It is an amazing thing, though, to even hear you say again that you had an aging. I really had written up, and you know, as far as just the investor side of me, I was not investing early on in anything to do with coffee because I thought, well, hey, this is a dying out deal. I will tell you, just as an aside, sort of funny that every now and then I go to a coffee house or sometimes a Starbucks or something else, and I'll tell some of the ladies in our office I'm going, and they'll say, hey, will you bring me? I'll say, sure. And then they have to write down, because all I do is go in and order coffee. Give me a medium coffee, you know. But they write down, give me a something frappuccino with, I don't know, I'm embarrassed to say it kind of when I get in there. I say, you need to write this down because I have no clue what I'm ordering here. It is these exotic drinks they're ordering in there.
Yeah, it's an art form. One of the things I really loved about running the coffee houses was that there truly was an art to it. And, you know, picking out specific beans and being able to do blind taste tests and determine what country a bean came from was really fun. And we did tons and tons of training with baristas so that they could make the perfect shot. And you can taste a bad shot if it's not perfectly timed and perfectly tamped. So nowadays they have machines that I think do a lot more of it for you. Because it's been about almost 15 years since I've been off doing this other thing. But I know that we took it as an art and a passion. It was more than just selling coffee. We really took it as an art form.
I think almost anyone successful in business, to have fun in business, it does need to be a passion. You know, you and your business now with Crossroads Professional Coaching, you have primarily built a career. Correct me if I'm wrong, in targeting Christian run businesses. I think I told you a little note I gave you earlier. I'm a big Ricky Skaggs fan. And I've heard him say several times, you know, Ricky is a well-known Christian singer, but he will say, he doesn't like to be called a Christian artist. He says he prefers to be called an artist who happens to be a Christian. Do you relate to that in the people that you deal with in business?
We talk about it a lot, like a lot of groups that I'm in online. Different people feel challenged by marketing themselves as a Christian-run business.
Right.
The reason that I've chosen to do that, and I've chosen to help Christians in business, they're not necessarily running a Christian-branded business, but they're just Christians in business,
right,
is because I found that a lot of times people felt that they couldn't be successful in business and be competitive against the world if they followed their Christian values in business. And I believe very strongly that not only, you know, is it important to follow our Christian values in our business, but that it's actually an advantage, not something that puts them at a competitive disadvantage. But there's so many misconceptions and myths about what it's like to follow your faith in your business that I felt like it was important to help people that were Christians in business be able to follow their faith, put good business principles in play, and be very successful so that they could become, you know, a success story that other Christians in business would want to follow and not feel like they had to do some of the things that the world in business does, cutting corners, letting, you know, customer service fall, to cut expenses, things like that, not holding your employees accountable. You know, some people feel like that you have to be nice in business, and so you have to let your employees walk all over you, and that's not necessarily biblical.
Right.
So I felt like that if I could do both, help people to be able to, you know, really lean on their faith in their business and have Christian values as a foundation for their business, plus use really strong business principles to grow their business, then it would be a wonderful example of how faith and business can intersect and work hand in hand.
You know, Sue, those are things, some of the things you talked about are things that I've actually had to deal with myself. You know, is to, you know, how much on your sleeve do you wear your Christianity? I mean, I've always felt leery about trying to use my relationship with Jesus as a business advantage. I've always felt that that was, I don't know, I'm uncomfortable ever doing that. But at the same time, part, I think, of Christian values is treating people fairly, being fair to customers, fair to your employees. I think good customer service and Christian values go hand in hand. I can't, you know, what's Christ-like about cheating people? I mean, that's not, there's nothing, or delivering bad service. But at the same token, you know, when we charge, or at least I feel like you should charge a fair price for your services. You don't have to be the Walmart of whatever business you're in. You can be, you can make a profit. And at the same time, you can hold yourself and others in your organization accountable. I think that is something that a lot of us probably struggle a bit with at times.
Yeah, I think that when I say that our faith is an advantage, I think I mean it more as an internal advantage.
Right.
For example, when I'm really stressed about something in business, which, you know, always comes to everyone at some point or another, now that I'm a Christian, which I was not raised a Christian, now that, you know, since I've become a Christian, I'm able to let that stress go a lot. I pray about it. You know, I look at what biblical principles there are, and I know to follow them. And so it takes a lot of indecision out of my business, and it takes a lot of the, you know, stress and emotion and wear and tear out, which doesn't mean necessarily I would have to tell anybody about my faith in that example, but it's an internal strength to me. So if someone wanted to know how, no matter what cycle my business is going through, I always remain hopeful and positive and proactive, I can easily say that, you know, my faith is a big part of that. It's a big foundation for that.
I heard Andy Stanley one time say that, you know, when the vision is clear, the decisions are few, and the options are few, and the decisions become easy. We'll be back in just a moment after a break. You are listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. More to come with Sue Miley. So stick around. Welcome back to Driven to Business. We're here every Saturday morning here on WAFS, Atlanta's Biz 1190. And as always, we're glad you're here. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Our guest today is Sue Miley with Crossroads Professional Coaching. Sue, very quick, how do you, since you tend to target Christian businesses, can you tell us how you find those people? How do you find clients? How do you target them? Or prospect, I guess would be the right word.
Well, I mostly use my blog, and I write about business, and I write about faith. And then I take those principles and those blog posts, and I share them across different social media platforms to get people to sign up for our newsletter.
I think I found you. I Googled some topic. I don't even remember what it was now, and I found you and began reading your blog. By the way, tell folks, how do they get to your blog? How do we find it?
You can go to www.christianbusinesscrossroads.com. And another way to get there is www.sumiley.com.
Right, and by the way, I would encourage anyone. They're very good, helpful, short blogs, and just sort of inspirational to quick ways to do things. So, one of your blogs I enjoyed a lot recently was I think that the title was something like 10 Things You Can and Should Do If Business Is Slow. And there's no one that hasn't had a slow time in business. Can you give us a quick overview of that?
Yeah, that was inspired because I have many, many small business clients who when the economy changes or it's seasonally just a slow time for their specific industry, they just kind of stop and wait for business to return. So they're in a reactive mode rather than a proactive mode, right, feeling like they're in control of their business. And I see that more and more from new clients that come in and from people that I interact with on social media and different business groups. And so this blog post was giving 10 things that you can do when business is slow that takes you from feeling like you are a victim of the circumstances, whether it's the economy, the industry, the timing of the year, and puts you in the role of a business manager. You're managing your business, and there are many things you can do to have an impact on the results and the growth of your business, whether it's slow times or it's not slow times.
You know,
there's several suggestions there.
One of the things that you talk about in that blog that I thought was particularly interesting is you talk about sort of a warning about depression. One of the things I think can happen when anybody that has a business and it gets slow, you can get depressed. And that depression, in a way, can almost be debilitating because you quit doing anything. And then, of course, it's self-fulfilling. It gets worse. Talk to us a little bit about that.
That's exactly. You identified it perfectly. It's debilitating. Once you get sucked into what I call the black hole of depression, you don't feel like doing even the things that you were doing before. And so it erodes your business. If you have employees, it impacts the morale of your team because they see that you're not being proactive. And it affects your relationships overall, even at home. So that what ends up happening is when times get bad, you actually pull your business down instead of fighting to keep it going up. Because with depression, we just, you know, that one of the key signs of depression is not feeling like doing the things that you would normally do if you just don't have the energy or the interest in doing them anymore.
I would encourage anyone listening to go to Sue Miley's blog on that and read that. That's a great little blog. It would introduce you to Sue as well. So, you know, I've used some coaches. I've always used that term, but coaches in the past. And I view you coaches kind of like I view, I hope this wouldn't offend my pastor, but I view a good sermon on Sunday. I rarely hear anything in a sermon I didn't already know, but it sort of serves to remind me about what I already know and to start doing it a lot better. And I see a lot of value in that. Do I have the right perspective of you guys, or am I all wet?
I think it just depends on the coach. We're really not like that. A lot of the coaching schools teach you that you can just ask the right questions and you don't have to have a background in what you're coaching on. And I don't personally agree with that or believe with that perspective. I feel like that the more that we can niche our coaching to be in an area that we do have expertise in, then you have the value of both. You have the value of the coaching and the encouragement and the pulling the knowledge you have about your own business out of you, but then we can also provide, I guess, a little bit of a consultant's role because we have expertise in, you know, business, and we can help to partner with you in coming up with, you know, solutions and strategies and, you know, growth techniques that you can use for your business. So I feel like to not give coaching a bad name, that people should be more cautious about calling themselves a coach if they don't have any kind of expertise or credentials. Because there's not a regulation for coaching out there.
Right.
So it's just my opinion.
Yeah. So you're saying I am all wet. Is that what you're
saying? I'm saying there's lots of people that do what you're saying, but I think that if you're picking a coach that there are
lots of people tell me I'm all wet. That's fine.
Expertise also.
Yeah. You know, one of my own experiences some time ago was we ran through a little problem in our company where we just could not turn a profit. We had been very profitable for a good little while, and all of a sudden, it just seemed like doing the same things, and I just had the hardest time getting my arms around it. And I finally got a business coach, I guess would be the term you would use. I think at that time we were calling it a consultant. the guy that I knew, and he came in, and we sat down, and for like 2 days, we just literally went over, we just did a very, very, very hard examination of everything we were billing, spending, and everything, and went all, just dug very, you know, I'm not a good finance person, we just went all the way through all of that, and uncovered a couple of areas where I had basically let some expense creep happen. We had a couple of very large jobs that were basically carrying us more than I thought they were carrying us, and when those jobs ended, all of a sudden, our base business was no longer enough to support us. I didn't know that. But again, that points out the value, I think, of having an outside set of eyes with some expertise come in and say, hey, you need to look at this. This is what you need to look at. And I think that it's very helpful to me in doing that.
There was two things in that article I wrote that's specifically to that point. Is one, you have to step back and look at your business model. In a different economy, sometimes you do have to look at what your expense structure right. is. And just really streamline things and be proactive and not too reactive to that situation. The other is to reevaluate your product and service offerings, because during different times, people are willing to pay for things if they feel like they have a need for it. So sometimes we have to repurpose our product offerings or service offerings, or maybe even develop new products and services that are specifically needed by our customer base.
Exactly.
There's some specific business things you can do to try to return to profitability.
Right. You know, I've made the statement a number of times that were I investing today, we started our business almost 25 years ago. I wouldn't invest a nickel today in the business plan that I started with 25 years ago, because a lot of the business I was doing then doesn't exist now. And if you were trying to do that business, you wouldn't have any. So we've had to adjust and adapt. And I think that's pretty true with a lot of businesses. So I guess it to some way you're saying there. You know, another thing a good friend of mine says, I'd like to get you to respond to, and may have to be after the break, is that a lot of times slow times in our businesses force us to do things that really we should have been doing during good times. Do you agree with that? And again, we may have to go on the break. How about a minute here?
Yes, I do completely agree with that. And so sometimes it's a challenge that when we are making a lot of money and we have a lot of revenue, we don't watch our expenses as much. So sometimes we throw money at it just to keep things going. But I think that when things slow down, we have a chance to really build the foundation much more efficiently and solid that will support our growth with, as little spending as possible. So I do believe you have to grow the top line to be strong in business long term. You can only cut expenses so much.
And I think the pressure of doing that perhaps does force us into that a little better. You know, Sue, some people say they work best under pressure. There are people that say, I only work under pressure. You're listening to Driven to Business. We're here with Sue Miley, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're talking with Sue Miley, the founder of Crossroads Professional Coaching. Okay, Sue, I'm in the elevator with you or wherever. Give me your best sales pitch as to why I should hire you or somebody like you to help my business.
Well, when we're a small business owner, we don't have a lot of people with experience or just some objectivity to discuss the growth of our business with. And so I think coaches serve several roles. One is to, be that sounding board, someone to support you and hear your ideas and help play devil's advocate. I also believe that in our case, we have a lot of business expertise, and if you can find the combination of the coaching partnership encouragement and the expertise of a coach that has helped several different types of businesses grow in different economies at different sizes and in different industries, then you can learn from some of their expertise and collaborate and partner together between the two sets of expertise to grow your business even more. And one thing that I think also is important is to have a coach that stays with you in the process.
Right.
The old model of consulting was you give recommendations and then you leave and move on to the next client. I think that coaches will stay, will help you walk through the execution and help you adjust and fine-tune as you go along. Because as you mentioned, there's always some changes and tweaking that has to happen to continue to stay occurring in your industry and in the marketplace. So those are the things that I think is helpful for any business owner to have a business coach help him along the path.
As I said, I have done that in the past. One of the functions I think that people like you do, or I guess one way to look at it, if a business owner is trying to evaluate about using someone with your expertise, would be to think of it this way, that perhaps his small business could not afford to hire an executive like Sue Miley to take care of some things, but perhaps by renting you, in effect, for short periods of time as a coach, he sort of gets a little bit of that benefit, but in a way that actually is affordable for a business. I think that's another way to look at that. The other thing I think you guys do for us is a lot of us can get anybody in a small business or any business, you can get very myopic at how you look at things. And, you know, you're looking at, you got your blinders on in a way. You don't mean to have, but you do. And I think one of the things occasionally, guys, people like you have to do is come in and rip those blinders off. Do you have to do that?
Yeah, that's where my counseling background comes in handy a lot. It's helping people figure out and see the resistance that they have. And so having that counseling background helps me to be able to challenge in a way that, the business owner knows I'm on their side and I'm just trying to help them reach the goals that they have for their business. Sometimes it's things that we don't want to hear, and sometimes it requires change, and change, as you know, is hard for a lot of people. But it does happen a lot, and the way that I try to approach it is to meet the person where they are, figure out and understand exactly where they are and why they're there, and then help kind of walk alongside them to move them in a different direction.
I think that's an invaluable thing to do for people. A good friend of mine and a bank executive that now lives down in Florida, Sandra Young, had related a story to me back when she was running a big bank here in town, was that she had seen so many entrepreneurs keep pouring money into a business long after that particular business or that segment of that business had stopped being viable. And they would, they had this original dream, so they're driven to keep this dream alive, and they end up pouring everything that they've accumulated over the years into a business and end up filing bankruptcy. She was telling me that as a warning. Do you see that?
Yeah, of course. I think that, to me, that's again where the faith piece comes in. I feel like our vision, everything comes from God, including the vision for our business.
Right.
And it's not an end destination that we're looking for. It's more of directionally following God's path and will for our lives. And so if we feel comfortable doing that, and that's what we also seek as part of our faith, then I think it's easier to let go of specific ideas that we have in our head of what this business is supposed to look like and continue to, let God, the Holy Spirit, kind of lead us down a path. And so sometimes that may take us to a different place, and it takes, trusting in God to let go of the things that may no longer fit anymore in our business world that aren't profitable. In the business side of things, I call it sunk cost. It's the concept of sunk cost. If it's not working anymore, I look at what the resources I have today and say, how can I put it to use to achieve my vision going forward? What's the best alternatives? And I don't look at what I've already put in it in the past, because if it's not working, then I'll just get to the wrong place faster than if I switch gears and go to the direction that will work in today's economy.
So, Sue, let's say someone listening that is not does not view themselves as a Christian businessman, put it that way. I think it's a fair question asked, and it's a question that probably does come up. Do good moral Christian practices always coincide with good business practice? And that may be a bit of an unfair question, but I'm curious about your answer to that.
Well, I obviously completely believe that they create good business practices. And I think that at the end, the difference is what the person's goal is. And I think that if someone's not a Christian, they may have a goal of just making the highest profit for the short run. and they may cut some corners on some things that aren't good long-term business practices, but that could achieve their goal of a higher profit in the short run. But as a Christian in business, just profit by itself without a vision and without a mission to the business isn't what my goal is.
But you know, really, even I guess my point is, I think they, like you said, I believe that good Christian moral practices do coincide with good business practices. And you know, anybody that's taking a short-term view of sucking all the profit out of a customer they can, you know, you're not going to, as soon as that guy figures that out, he's no longer going to be a customer. And
right.
So taking a long view of it where you know, yes, you want to make money and make profits. In fact, if you're going to stay in business, you're going to have to make profits. But at the same time, being sure that the customer is in fact getting value, he's getting what he's paying for, and you're not trying to cheat him, and you're going to stand behind what you sell and offer good customer service. I heard Salem Broadcasting, that owns WAFS here. There's another station here in Atlanta that carries Dennis Prager in the afternoons. I've heard Dennis, who's a Jewish gentleman, and Dennis has made the statement before about why wouldn't you want to do business with a Christian, or even live next door to anybody that says you should love your neighbors yourself, you should do unto others as you want them to do unto you. I mean, those are all, just in general, those are the kind of things that anybody that would want to do business with somebody that believes that. So I think they do in fact coincide with great business practices that you follow those things. So have you ever fired a client? Have you ever had to fire one?
Yes. But my reasons were for what we were just talking about, a couple of clients. Well, there's two different reasons. One was that all the client cared about was profits at the expense of their employees and what I considered good business practices,
right,
and good moral practices. So I didn't feel like I was a good partner for them. And another time is when I work with somebody that continues to not put the things that we discuss and agree with into practice, and then I just feel like that, you know, it's wasting their money. They're not able to change, you know, their habits and not put the things that we're discussing into practice, and so I'm not comfortable continuing on for too long and just having them spend money on something that's not moving their business forward.
You know, we've actually, in our company, EMA, now we haven't done it very often, and I certainly wouldn't name any names, but we have, in fact, I guess de facto, fired a few customers, too. We're usually pretty kind about the way we do it, so they're not particularly offended. But, you know, you just sometimes have customers that you just don't mesh for what, I don't know why, you don't mesh, and nothing seems to work, and they're not happy with your work, and then, you know, because they're not happy with you, then you've got pay. You guys got all sorts of nonsense problems that go, and at some point you just figure out, you know, we're just not a match. This is just not good for us. It's not good for the customer. It's not good for us, and
yes,
we just need to break
it off. I do believe if you niche your business and you are very particular when you add new business and new clients on, we do a lot of screening up front.
Right.
So we're fortunate, and we don't have it happen very often. But of course, you know, we have in the past, but we try to really focus on where we feel like we add value and work with the people that do fit us the best, where we feel like we can make a difference for them.
So what's the most surprising thing you've run across in your business coaching? We have about a minute.
Just how hard some business owners work without making changes. They'll just continue to work themselves into the ground.
Wow.
And not make any changes when things obviously aren't working, and they stretch their arms as far as they can stretch, and they still won't hire an employee to help them or, you know, put things in place. And it just surprised me how frequent it was, how often it was that business owners get stuck and become their own ceiling to growth, because they aren't willing to get the help and the resources that they need to continue to grow.
You know, John Maxwell, in his book, The 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership, has one of his laws in there. It's called the Law of the Lid. And basically what it says is that the primary leader at a business can be the lid on that business. And it's very easy to do that if you just will not turn loose. and you will not delegate, and you just are ignoring what's going on around you, and it's not that the person isn't working hard. As you say, they're working very hard, but they're just not getting anywhere because of not really working smart.
Yes, and I love that book.
Yeah, I do too. That's one of my favorite books. We've interviewed his co-author Charlie Wintzel on here a couple of times, and it really is a fascinating book. Sue, I've been enjoying talking to you. We have one more segment to go here on Driven to Business. Let me remind people, we are streaming live on biz1190.com. You will find links to Sue and a podcast of today's program on the eddiemayfield.com, along with other podcasts and other links to our business. You are listening to Driven to Business. My name is Eddie Mayfield. We have one more segment to go, so stick around. Welcome back to the final segment of this week's Driven to Business. We're talking with Sue Miley. Sue, very interesting guest. I'm so happy you came on the program. Sue, can you think, you've had a lot of experience both in business and in coaching, and can you think of the biggest mistake that you've made, or a mistake you've made, and if so, can you share with us what you've learned from it?
Probably the biggest mistake I ever made in business was when I worked in the corporate world, is I was used to being an individual producer and doing everything by myself. And then I became a manager over quite a few people and did not do a very good job of it because I didn't let go of my own personal production. It took me a very difficult leadership assessment to realize that I had people that I could work through and that I could help them reach their potential, and then that would have a bigger impact on the company than if I just kept individually producing. And so I worked very hard to make the changes that were, you know, suggested by the results of this leadership assessment and really turned it around. And it's one of the things that catapulted my career in the business world, because once I learned to be able to manage people and help them to do well in their careers, I was able to move from department to department regardless of the area of expertise, because I could help other people do well. It really fits hand in hand with coaching. I was just coaching individuals and departments instead of individual business owners. But we can achieve a lot more through other people and with other people than we can do alone, regardless of how competent we are, how much expertise we have, or even how much energy we have. It runs out at some point.
I can also tell I'm older than you are, but one of the more rewarding things about being in business is actually also when you see people that perhaps started with you some years ago, you see them grow into very good business people, and I often say in our company EMA, we have people working there that are a lot smarter than I am that started there, and that's a very rewarding thing. And it also happens to be a way to be very successful in business, is to build a team around you. And like you, I think every one of us that were good at what we did by ourselves have to sort of face that demon of continuing to do it by yourself or turn it loose. And it's harder than it sounds to do that sometimes, because other people don't do things exactly like you do them, and they shouldn't do them exactly like you do them. And that's something I had to learn sometimes the hard way.
Right. Absolutely. I have two other business coaches, and within their areas of expertise, they're brilliant, and it makes for a lot more fun, and our ability to help people in such a more dynamic way, because we have the three of us coming from different disciplines with as much enthusiasm and passion for it as possible, and we have a lot of overlap, so we can help collaborate with clients. Sometimes we all work on the same client together, just depending on what the project is and who the client is.
Sue, you had mentioned the word fun. I'm a big believer in fun as a motivator. I actually say that to people quite often. But this is sort of like a silly question, I guess. But is it fun being Sue Miley?
I can honestly say, since I was 17 and worked and did different jobs, I've always had fun in whatever work I was doing, and I've been extremely lucky to have had such varied career opportunities, and they've all kind of accumulated into this coaching and counseling role. So I've been able to use all of my business background, all of my management background, all my counseling background, all of my education, all kind of coming together for this role. And so it's absolutely the best place I could imagine being at this stage in my career. And my goal has been, since becoming a Christian about, I think it's been about 13 years, I was actually raised Jewish. I wanted to help other people find God's will for their life and their business. And this role absolutely allows me to spend time doing that every day. And, you know, it's very, very rewarding.
You know, you're a passionate person about what you do, aren't you?
Yes, very much so. That was always important. And even when I was in the corporate world, I was very passionate and intense. And, you know, it can be a workaholic, or when you can start to balance things, it just makes it a lot more fun.
So I read a Inc. magazine article years and years ago about and the story was about this guy that had formed a business, and I don't even remember his name or the name of the business, but they were asking him, and it was a small business, but a fairly successful small business, and they asked him, would you do it again? And the interviewer said that he paused and said, I'm not so sure. He said, this business has cost me my family, my friends, and he started through listing, and it was very, very sad. And he ended up saying, he said, I have made a lot of money, but I'm not sure it's been worth it. I don't think that's what the Inc. interviewer expected the guy to say. But I remember thinking that is a sad story. And it doesn't have to be that way. It does not have to be that way. Success does not have to cost you your family. It does not have to cost you your faith. And it does not have to cost you your friends or to take all the fun out of your life. And if it does, you're not doing it right.
I agree with that. And I think, again, that's back to the God thing for me is knowing what your purpose is in whatever role you play, is making sure it's purposeful. And part of the difference between, you know, living a vision that God's given to you is I don't think it separates work from life. I think it's all part of our life, and all of it has to integrate very well and just be seamless. And if any part gets out of balance, it takes away that seamlessness. So I know I was a little bit on the intense side before becoming a Christian, and that's really has been the key to helping me balance the pieces out.
I used to have a good friend. He's passed away out in Texas, of a small business guy named Autry Thompson out there. And Autry used to tell me, he's a great friend. Autry used to tell me that he always said man, but he meant person. So every person really has three parts of their life. You have your professional life, you have your family life, and you have your spiritual life. And if you, he sort of would do the three-legged stool thing. If you let those come out of balance to where that, you know, you're all about work, and then your life's out of balance. On the other hand, if you don't work, then your life's out of balance.
Right.
And if you ignore your family, your life's out of balance. So I always thought that's great. That's just what he used to say. I thought it was great advice.
I agree with that too.
Hey, how do you want to be remembered? We have about a minute when your career is said and done.
You know, that's an interesting question. The thing I've enjoyed most is I have a lot of client referrals, and I love the fact that all of my clients at some point or another connect and know each other. And I just want to connect people with each other. So I guess it's kind of neat when someone thinks about when they knew how they met somebody else, or what a common connection was that, you know, I helped bring other people together and with people and resources that they needed, and help them find God's vision for their business and their lives. It's not about, you know, something I specifically did. Just knowing that they're in that place is all that matters to me. So they don't have to even remember me for it or give me credit for it. Just them being in that spot where they have a lot of good relationships, and they have a business that they feel like is a calling, not just a job.
Well, Sue, you've been a great guest. Thank you so much for coming on today. I'm sure our listeners have enjoyed your wisdom and expertise, and I am so thankful you agreed to be on Driven to Business with me today.
Thank you for having me. I look forward to listening to more of your different segments.
Well, thank you. And by the way, remember to go to eddiemayfield.com, and you need to sign up for Sue's blogs. Go to suemiley.com or go to eddiemayfield.com. I've got the I have the links. I will have the links there to her. You've been listening to Driven to Business. We're glad you're here with Sue Miley, a great guest today. We'll be back again next week. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Visit next Saturday at 11 a.m. on Biz 1190 for more Driven to Business. To learn more about Driven to Business, visit eddiemayfield.com or call 770-448-4644.